Welcome to The Dream Show. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson, and this is episode 302. And I've just finished recording the conversation with my guest, soul guide, shamanic healer, podcaster, and the co-founder of Wild Sovereign Soul, Leanne Brooke Tyler. And Leanne lives in England in Hertfordshire, in a 500-year-old quintessentially English country cottage with her husband, two children, an array of rescue animals, and her beloved rose bushes, blessed to be living what she describes as her own soul's myth. As you'll hear, Leanne suffered 15 years of chronic pain, panic attacks and anxiety, all of which mysteriously disappeared in 2012 upon the sudden death of her father. And it was that inexplicable transformation that inspired her to leave a leadership role in the corporate world, to immerse herself in discovering what creates pain and struggle, and conversely, how to live from soul. Then for over a decade, Leanne, together with co-founder Jonathan Wilkinson, has guided soul seekers to find their way home, released from cycles of overwhelm, loneliness, and endless self-improvement, finally free to live a life of deep meaning, embodied ease, and love. Their work, The Wild Sovereign Soul Path, is a journey of devotion to reclaim wildness, actualize sovereignty, and awaken the soul. It's an alchemy of ancient ways for these modern days, weaving together eclectic wisdom teachings and traditions such as mythical archetypes, rewilding, alchemy, animus spirituality, Kabbalah, embodiment, and self-illumination. So first up in our conversation today, Leanne shares her dream. And as you know, if you've listened to the show for a while, I always ask my guests to tell me nothing about their dream until we begin recording. So that way you get to experience how we approach exploring a dream from scratch. It's a beautiful dream. We go into it in a lot of depth. It's also very entertaining, and I know you're going to get a lot from it. And after that, we explore more of Leanne's work with Wild Sovereign Soul, the kind of work she does, and more of her story as well. But before we go to our conversation, a reminder of my website, which is janeteresa.com. That's Teresa without an H, where you can find out about my dream resources, my services, my books, and my courses. And at the end of our chat, we share Leanne's contact details, and these are also in the show notes. So let's go to England. Let's go and visit Leanne right now. Welcome to The Dream Show, Leanne.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. And I can see some movement in the background. You've got a dog on your chair.
I have one on the, he's Laszlo, my old boy, and that's his favourite spot. He's become almost a feature of my own podcast because people have got so used to him sitting there. And I've got three dogs in total. The other one's just outside. You may see him at various points on the sofa there. But yes, it's probably the worst combination for podcasts to have dogs who might possibly bark, but they've mostly learned to settle and be part of it.
Well, I have been on your show twice in the last couple of months, and there's been no dogs barking, so let's hope we're third time lucky.
Yes.
Let you just set the scene for people. You're in I know your cottage is in Hertfordshire in England, obviously, and I think you said it's 500 years old. That's a lot. Would you like to describe where you live a little bit?
I love old houses and have been blessed enough to live in several old ones, and this is the second one in a row that is that old. And it's got an older section that is the oldest part, and then it's got a newer section that was, we think, 1950s, which is now quite old too. But yes, it just has got, you know, I don't know how you feel about old houses, you know, the bones of the house in that, like, it's got its own soul that I just love.
Yes, this one I'm in is 100 years old, just over 100, but that's nothing compared to 500. That's absolutely brilliant. Okay, so on the a couple of times I was on your show, we spontaneously looked at one of your dreams, and I've no idea what dream you've brought today, so spotlight's on you now.
Let's dive in. I think it's one of those ones, I mean, all dreams can be, but you know, some of them like, whoo, this feels like it could be quite revealing.
Well, it might be.
So this, yes, it's got all the elements. So the setting is technically my neighbour's house, but as often is the case in dreams, is not my neighbour's house as I normally know it. And it begins where I'm standing at the threshold of, like, at my garden gate, and I'm kind of moving back and forth between inside my garden and the other side, which is our drive, which we share with our neighbours. And on my side, as in my garden, there's my son, my husband, and my stepfather. And on the drive side, I've got tons of rose. I love roses, and I've got loads of rose bushes in my garden. But in the dream, I have a whole row of rose bushes in the drive. In the drive. And it seems as though I've intentionally put them there so that I can cut buttonholes for my menfolk for this wedding. So that's what I'm doing. It seems as though they're there for that intention. So I'm cutting a rose and then turning back to come back into my garden to place a buttonhole for each of the men. And then as I'm doing that, I'm a bit confused, like, where does it go again? Like, where do we put buttonholes? And it's like, as I'm doing it, I'm kind of looking at that person, like, where does it go on you? Anyway, so I'm being very, like, engrossed in this, like, I need to get them ready and right for this wedding that we're going to. And I'll just give some context, actually, about my neighbours. We have a really great relationship with them. They're in their 70s. With two grown-up girls, and they're kind of more like, they've become kind of friends stroke family over the years. They are just a really lovely family, and the mother and father, who still live there, the grown-up girls don't, they're very vibrant and alive and adventurous for their age. So at the moment they're traveling for 2 months in Asia. So I just want to give that context. It feels important, although they're not actually in the dream, the fact that they are my neighbors and it was at their house feels important to say.
Yes.
And so when I finally finished faffing around trying to figure out how to put these buttonholes on the men, we're ready to go into the my neighbor's house. And so at this point, I'm not actually sure whose wedding it is. And it's not really the wedding we're going to. It seems like we're going to perhaps the wedding party. It's not really clear, but it doesn't appear to be my neighbour's family directly, as in it's not, obviously my neighbours are married. They're grown up daughters. One of them's married, one of them isn't, but it wasn't her. And so we're there and we're meant to be there, but I don't actually know whose wedding we're going to. And then I, after all this messing around, trying to get the buttonholes right for the men, I realised, like, oh my goodness, I'm not wearing the right thing. And it's interesting because I'm currently going through a bit of a wardrobe evolution in waking life. And so I'm looking and thinking, I feel simultaneously like I'm not wearing enough, as in I feel quite exposed. But simultaneously, I don't feel bad about myself. I notice often in dreams, I feel actually really fabulous. Like I feel really magnetic and wonderful. And so in this dream, I have this strange juxtaposition where I actually feel kind of confident and good about myself, but whilst also recognizing I don't necessarily know what I'm wearing is appropriate.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel appropriate to go to a wedding party. And then we get into the house, and the house is completely different to my neighbour's actual house. So theirs is also old. And in the dream, they have massively extended and renovated it. And so there's whole sections I've never been in before. And so it's still really beautiful. It's got the same sense of history. They've renovated it in a way that honours the house, but it's radically different. Again, like these sort of whole new areas and rooms and all of this. And I remember feeling a bit envious because in comparison, like in waking life, our house is bigger than theirs. But in the dream life, I'm like, oh, my house feels really small now. And also, we've been trying to get planning permission to knock down an old conservatory and replace it with an extension for 6 years now and struggling to get planning permission. So I'm like, my goodness, how have they done this? I'm feeling a bit like pleased for them, but a little bit envious as well. so that's the setting. And then I don't remember everything else chronologically, but I've got some key parts that I do remember, and I'm not totally sure if I got the order right. I think I have mostly, but there might be some parts that are out of sync. So I'm with a younger woman who seems like she's got this real familiar feeling, but I don't recognize her. And so she's sort of simultaneously in reflection, it's a bit like she is me at a younger age, but in the dream I'm not. It has that kind of strange familiarity, but in the dream I wasn't thinking, oh, it's my younger self. But in waking, when I woke up, I was like, she had that sort of feel like she was me but younger. And then we're looking for something that is like a Kindle. I don't think in the dream we were thinking it was a Kindle, but it resembled a Kindle. Certainly what I recall, it looked like a Kindle. And then I've got one. I don't often have those like going to the loo dreams that I know are quite common. I hardly ever have them. But in this dream, I've got all the ingredients. I also need the loo. And I was funny enough, when I knew I was coming on this show, I was like, I really don't want to have a loo dream. So of course I do.
Perfect programming.
So, and it's a really horrible one as well. So, so we're looking for, I think we must be momentarily forgetting the search for the Kindle and now looking for a loo. And we go to the first one and it's busy. Then we go to another one and for some reason it's got like a table in front of it or something, and it's closed off for this party for some bizarre reason. And then we go upstairs to this, it's a really strange structure. It's not something anyone would have in their house. It reminds me a little bit of a structure you might see in the Wild West back in the day, like very wooden and a little bit kind of lean-to. And so we go up these stairs where there's this loo, and we're aware that through, because it is very kind of makeshift, we can see through the cracks in the floor. We haven't actually got into the cubicle yet, sorry, as we're passing across the floor of this structure, we can see downstairs and there's a bar below it and people are sitting there below and we can see them through the cracks. So we then carry on into the cubicle. And we're kind of together in this cubicle facing each other, even though you normally only have one loo in a cubicle. In this loo, we have two cubicles, two loos facing each other in the same cubicle. So we both sit down and then we both have really bad diarrhea. And so again, it's just like great. When I woke up, it's just like, not only do I have a loo chew, I'm like a full on. Just the most unappealing dream, but hey, this is what happened. So we finish, and then as we're leaving the cubicle, a man kind of like appears up from out of the loo and tries to grab us. So we're coming out of the cubicle and he comes up and tries to grab us. And so I must have the kin. So again, it's interesting how this Kindle kind of goes and comes back again. So we do have the Kindle at this point because he tries to grab the Kindle. We managed to keep hold of it, and he pulls. I've got a green cardigan that I have. I wasn't wearing it earlier in the dream, of course, but at this point I have this green cardigan on, which I have in real life. And he grabs my cardigan, trying to pull me back with it. And I have that moment of like, should I just let him have my cardigan and then I can escape? And then I'm just like, no, I want to have my cardigan as well. And so I pull it kind of like extra hard and then let go, like as in not let go of the cardigan, but kind of like give up, as it were.
Yeah.
And so he manages to, he sort of like rebounds back into the loo. And so I'm free. I've got my cardigan and my Kindle and we've escaped. And then we have this sense of, oh my goodness, I think we've killed him. Even though he's gone back to where he came, we have this sense of like, well, he was a baddie. He was trying to get us. It was self-defense, but like, oops, we didn't mean to kill him.
only in the dream.
It's like, can we justify it? I think we can. It was not what we'd intended, but and I made a note also of what he looked like. So he was kind of slim, tall, slim, black hair, and he was quite striking looking, but neither like strikingly ugly or strikingly handsome, just striking. And interestingly, I think he also was wearing a green jumper. So there's definitely some sort of theme about green knitwear going on. I obviously wanted to upgrade to a cardigan. Okay, so that was that section. So then we are back outside and somehow we don't have the Kindle. And again, it might be because my chronology of the story is out of place. I don't know, but I do think it's one of those dreams where sometimes you have something, then you don't, even if it's sort of followed in order. So I don't know. But we're outside and we're agreeing to look for the Kindle. And I'm demonstrating either to her or to someone else what this Kindle looks like. And I have a device upside down on the table in front of me. And I think, oh, I can use this to demonstrate. And then I turn it over and it's one of those, do you remember those quite old school office calculators? They're kind of this sort of side, yes, of really big chunky buttons,
yes,
that like back in the day, accountants and things would use, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And so I turn it over and I'm like, huh, that's confusing. And then I'm like trying to say like, yeah, but it's kind of an example, even though it's totally not what I was expecting. And it doesn't look anything like the Kindle I'm trying to share with you. And that's what I remember. So, yeah, I don't know if we ended up with a Kindle or not, because it may be that that bit is earlier in the dream.
Yeah.
But that, I think, is everything I can remember.
That's amazing. When did you last have or use one of those chunky accountants calculators?
Oh my goodness. I've got no idea. It's funny because I can picture one really clearly as if we would have had one here, but I'm like, why would we have had one here? I don't know if maybe the children had one for some reason. That's all I can think of is like, I wonder whether the children had one, my children, this is, whether they had one as a, they got from somewhere and they sort of had it as like a play item.
Yeah.
Is what I'm wondering.
Yeah.
But yeah, not for a very long time.
And do you use Kindles or do you prefer paperback? So what's your feelings about Kindle?
I use both. I prefer to read real books, but I remember when I was first with my husband, we went away on holiday because I'm a real reader. And I was like, we were going for 2 weeks to Mexico or something. And I'm like, I'm going to have to take a lot of books. So this, I think, was back before I either didn't have a Kindle or I'd not yet come around to the idea of a Kindle. And I took 5 really big books. And he's like, are you kidding me? I'll take all these. But I read all of them. So I've adjusted to having Kindles for practical reasons. So yes, I use both.
for practical reasons, usually for traveling and moving around, or do you use them at home as well?
Both, yes. Both. I use them at home as well now.
Yeah, okay. So it's interesting right there. It's a fantastic dream. It's interesting right there. It finishes with this contrasting something quite old-fashioned compared to this newer thing that you're looking for. And earlier in the dream, you've got the sense of the neighbours renovating a house and changing it from something old to something. They kept the old part, but they also added new, kind of added the Kindle aspect. And also in the dream, you met an older version of yourself, or a younger version of yourself. and so this kind of, you know, this kind of upgrade, the theme of upgrading sort of going through here, particularly because you just made an aside and you said, as an aside, you're kind of changing your wardrobe and waking life. So obviously there's something going on about changing and change and upgrading. But if we start at the very beginning of the dream, I love that I love that you're growing the rose bushes in the driveway. You put all that effort. And how long did it take to grow these rose bushes just for this one occasion of picking the buttonholes?
Devotion for you.
It's devotion, yeah. And roses are something you're very passionate about. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the dream, in a sense, opens with that theme of devotion, something that I have been this is about something I've been extremely devoted about. I've given an enormous devotion to, and it's now coming to fruition. And it's not only coming to fruition, but I'm using them in the dream to celebrate a wedding, a union of some kind, a moving forward. So that, you know, the opening of a dream will often suggest the issue or the theme that the whole rest of the dream goes on to explore.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the dream starts with something I've put in a lot of devotion and time and effort into something, and it's come to fruition, and it's something around moving forward, integrating a wedding, a celebration, a change. And then if you keep that combined with the fact that when you talked about, you described your garden, you described the neighbour's house, which is important, and we'll come back to the neighbour's house, but you used the word threshold. I wrote down threshold. You said there's a garden, then there's a drive, and you were standing on the threshold between the drive and the... and whenever we approach change in life, we're like, we're on a threshold, aren't we?
Yes, it was interesting that as I said that word, I was like... Huh, I almost sound like I'm intentionally trying to be a bit clever by naming it a threshold, but it was just the word that came, because it was very, like, it was unusual that I was going back, because I was needing to go back and forth between the rose bushes and the menfolk. So I was very much kind of, it wasn't like I was one place or the other. I kept moving back and forth. Yes. And so it felt very thresholded.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Mm. And often, you know, when anybody is talking about a dream and you're immersed in the symbolism of the dream, you will often come up with words that are telling about the meaning of the dream as well. So it's quite common to be in the situation where you're and you hear yourself say a word. Oh, I don't even usually use that word. Where did that come from? But it's your unconscious mind joining in. And as you described there was a going back and forward. It was intentional because you were taking the buttonholes, but it was a going back and forward. So again, there's a sort of reiteration of the dream at the beginning that a lot of devotion has gone in, a point of readiness for, you know, flowering, blossoming and change. But at the moment, in a kind of on a bit of a threshold, having to go back and forward and back and forward, a bit of back and forward and going on. And so it's possible the rest of the dreams are going to go, why are you going back and forward? Do you want to go forward or do you want to back? Are we stuck in a bit of back and forward? What's going on here? And I love that at the beginning, it was like, I've got the men sorted. They've got their buttonholes. And then all of a sudden, like, what about me?
Finally.
So it's possible that because you had three men there of different generations, your son, your husband and your stepfather, it is possible that they represent your yang or your inner male or your world of work. So it's like, I've got that sorted. I've got the structure sorted. I've got the left brain sorted. I've got the masculine sorted. Oh my goodness, I haven't done the fit. What about the feminine side of it? I haven't quite nailed that just yet. And that's why it's also interesting in waking life, you're doing on the threshold of doing a complete rethink of how you want to appear with your clothes, for example. Not that that's what it's about, but that's a byproduct of other changes in your life, you know. looking at my notes. And so, yeah, you did use the intention, the word intention there too, the buttonholes. It was a strong intention for the wedding. So again, it's like devotion, intention, the dream opening up. This is a dream about devotion and intention. And I guess the question from the dream is, where am I going with this? And sometimes slightly questioning the intention, and is it working out? And what needs to be sorted out to move further forward? Yeah, and you're engrossed, and that's really good, and trying to get everything ready and right so that all fits in. Like, I'm really, you are a very focused person. I know that from talking to you on your own podcast. You're very focused, very disciplined. You're getting everything ready and right. And then you take an aside to describe your neighbours, which was great to put that in context. So your neighbours, not in the dream, but the people who live next door. You said a vibrant and adventurous. You did say a third word, which I've forgotten because I didn't write it down.
Oh, maybe, let me just see if I made a note of how I described them, because I may have been, no, I don't know if I did.
That's okay.
What's the word I used?
Vibrant, adventurous.
Did I say alive? It sounds very similar to vibrant.
That's okay. We'll go with adventurous and vibrant. So there's a sense there that, you know, your dream could have brought in your neighbours on the other side or a complete stranger. Your dream intentionally brought in the feeling of your neighbours. So the feeling of vibrancy and adventure. So we could say you're on the
threshold. Although it's worth recognising, because I didn't say this, but when I think of them, they are a very rare couple that, you know, people who you would look at and just like, my goodness, what a beautiful example, what a model for how to do marriage and life well, because they have been married for, I don't know, maybe coming up to 50 years or something like that. So long, long married. They have such a beautiful relationship, like so celebratory, supporting of each other. And so have the real sense of kind of rootedness and togetherness, and yet are also so adventurous and alive and vibrant and just living life fully. And so they have both aspects.
Yes,
they're not kind
lovely.
Of wild, but don't have that, you know, that they have sort of tradition. In fact, interesting, like that their house was in the dream, that sort of sense of tradition and also openness to the new.
Yes, perfect, perfectly, absolutely perfect. They're able to sustain that vibrant and adventurous life because they do have the rootedness with them. And you used the word celebration. Should they celebrate a lot of life? And in the dream, it was a wedding celebration as well.
Of course, yes. Yeah.
But beautifully pointed out, as you know, actually it's a sense of balance. And I guess it's male and female energy as well. So that's what you're seeing for yourself. You're seeing, I want to move forward to that kind of thing, not necessarily in your own relationship, but I'm stepping more and more into that energy where I can have my vibrancy, a sense of adventure, whether that's actually geographical adventure or other kinds of adventures. But to do that, I want also to carry forward a feeling of dedication to each other or dedication to myself, the sense of the firm roots. They're doing it well. You said that they kind of do it well. And when you were putting the buttonholes in, you said you were trying to get it ready and right. So that's kind of emphasizing that again. So you want to make this change, and you want to do it really well, kind of in a long-term, sustained, deeply rooted, and yet also vibrant and adventurous way. So you do, you go over, you know, we've left the threshold for a little while and we've gone over into that kind of energy. Think of it as that energy. And you said at that point, oh, I've done all the messing around for the men. And then I realised, oh, what about me? What about my wardrobe? So again, I think we've already covered that. It's like, okay, now I've got the vision for the masculine side of what it is that I want to achieve, but I haven't quite fine-tuned the feminine. And you think in the dream, interesting, you know, I feel expert. Usually you said in dreams you feel magnificent. In this dream, it was more restrained than that. You felt a little bit exposed, but also comfortable. But in the end, you decided appropriate.
Yeah, so it was a funny. So in dreams in general, I tend to have a. It's rare that I come out of a dream, even if it's been a difficult dream or has had difficult parts of it. I always come out feeling like, oh, I like how I was in the dream. and so I tend to feel very confident and magnetic and powerful in my dreams.
Yes.
And so it was an interesting experience because I felt like that still, but I was looking at my what I was wearing. I was like, it's not really the best thing to wear. Like, it's not really appropriate. I look a little bit too casual and like I'm not really wearing enough. Uh-huh. And so it was a strange feeling. It's like I'm not really wearing the right thing. And yet I still feel good. I still feel like myself. It was that sort of strange. Like, I'm going to try almost like put aside the fact that I don't look right because I feel right.
Okay, I love that. Mm. I don't look right, but I feel right. And you're putting the feeling right above how you look. Mm. So it's that sense of whatever clothing, not the clothing that you put on you, but however I dress up this new thing that I'm moving towards, the emphasis isn't really on how I dress up, it's on how I feel about it. Emphasize the feeling, not the image, not how it looks.
Mm.
And, you know, you came down with appropriate. And it's kind of, when you were speaking there, I was thinking, you know, oh, it's wonderful in your other dreams that you feel powerful. I mean, that's fantastic. Everyone wants to feel powerful. But the way you described your neighbours, it's almost like they're powerful because they're vibrant, but they're also rooted. So maybe that appropriate is that kind of feeling of, yes, I know I'm magnificent and powerful, and of course I am, but maybe I also want to feel appropriate and rooted. Maybe in a sense I want to bring more balance. My power is tick, I've done that, but I need to perhaps also ground it more in some kind of practical sense.
Mm.
Feel more appropriate to what it is that I want to move towards. Don't think clothing. I can tell.
There's a number of different themes that I'm going to hold back and say what I'm pondering at the moment because I feel like I'm, you know, something feels premature because I feel like there's a number of different themes all changing in my life at the moment. So I think I want to hear a little bit more before I kind of know, oh, it's probably this.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
That's absolutely fine. So so you have that kind of feeling of actually I'm kind of okay. And you go next door and you see that they have done this amazing extension. And again, they kept they renovated in a way which honoured the, I think you said honoured the historic aspect of it. They kept that, but made it better. And then they added on, they added more. So although it was perceived as the neighbour's house in the dream, this is you looking into when I am more, when we move into this thing that's more vibrant, more adventurous, and yet perhaps more rooted, and perhaps even more committed because there's a long-term marriage, I'm going to keep and honour where I have been, where I've come from, and I'm going to add on. But this adding on, in this moving into new space, new potential in my life, moving into new areas, does not mean that I'm leaving the past behind. I'm honouring the best of the history of who I am. Even though in the dream you felt that as a bit of a jealousy. What about my house? I want that. That's a bit of logical mind coming in there. And I'm just looking at my notes. What was added on was radically different. And I can't read what I wrote there. It says a bit something or other. Anyway, it's radically different. So, again, what you're anticipating is expanding or creating room, more room, in a way that is radically different to what you've done before, while also keeping the old and honouring the old. So that's where it's really interesting, because that's where you met the young woman. And before you said, oh, now I think about it, I see she's a younger person myself, I thought when you said it, that's a younger part of you, because it feels right. So it's almost like at this part of the dream, you go back to reconnect with, where was I at when I was younger? What was happening for me then? Is there something that I need to let go or change so that I can get off this threshold and actually move into this bigger area? So the moment you got that meet and let go and change, I'm not really surprised that you ended up looking for the loo to drastically let go of a lot of old diarrhea shit and crap.
Yeah. And she and I both were, interestingly.
Yes. Yeah. So your younger self was... and you were too, so you're not, because you, of course, as we all do, we all carry aspects of our younger self. that occasionally hold us back in various ways. Mm. And so you're needing to let go of that with her. But on the way to that, and that, yeah, it was when you said, oh, she feels familiar. I don't know, but she feels familiar. It's when you have that sense of meeting a dream character and they feel so familiar. You know, that's always, I mean, all dream characters are an aspect of myself, but that familiar one is really, really familiar aspect to myself. I can't quite put my finger on it, but I know this energy. I know it. I know it really, really well. So that's when we then start looking for a Kindle. So I guess the thing that jumps into my mind at that point is that, well, I mean, there's one thing is the play on words with Kindle. We Kindle something, we Kindle a relationship, we Kindle a love, we Kindle a new idea. But also, you know, just this doesn't have to be an accurate answer, but as a general idea, what year do you think either Kindles came out or you bought a Kindle?
Yeah, I don't know if this is right, but I feel like maybe around, I keep going to say an answer, so I'm going to say it, even though I don't necessarily know it's right.
Yeah.
I wonder if it was the year that my dad died, so 2012. Mm-hmm. It may not have been, it may have been sooner, but that's the year that keeps, there's something that is there's something tied to Kindles and that year of my life that's sort of nudging at my awareness.
Yes.
Okay.
And the younger woman in the dream, was she the age that you were when your dad died, or was she much younger?
She was really hard to place because it felt like she was kind of lots of ages simultaneously, really. I think at some point she seemed much younger, and then at other points she didn't. It was, I think when I made the notes, I said, what did I write? Yeah, I said, I'm with another woman who seems familiar and not, and also like she's young and my age at the same time.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
She was almost like me at a younger age, but I wasn't aware of that at the time. So, yeah, it just feels as though she's quite hard to place in. She has this sort of like amorphous quality where I'm never quite sure who or what she is.
A general sense of how I have been in the past and maybe for many years.
But your
unconscious mind is picking the Kindle. A Kindle is a new way of reading, a new way of doing something. Well, not now, but was. So there's that sense that you've tied it to your dad dying. At the time that your dad died, you maybe started to take a new approach to something, a new way of doing things. And in the dream, you're looking for that symbol again. So, you know, I don't think anything as drastic as your dad dying has happened now, but it's that same sense of the degree of change. I am looking in the dream for that.
Yes, which is very true in terms of this year feels as though it's a year of potential change. And again, hopefully not in the same way, but there was also, we may well touch on this later, but it was a year of change of all kinds, including really beautiful change. So, yeah, that's really interesting that that's the connection there.
So the constant search for the Kindle in the dream, and sometimes you have it and sometimes you don't. So it's a thing which is sometimes lost and sometimes found, which again kind of works with that threshold. I've got that energy I'm looking for, I haven't. I've got it, I haven't. I've got it, I haven't. I'm getting in touch with it, which is really lovely. And so then you know, in the middle of all that, the big diarrhea is the letting go, and all the opportunities, but the first toilet is too busy, the second one has got a table in front of it. So that search for the appropriate place to let go, and my wow, do you let go? And it's interesting because you could see through the cracks to the bar underneath, and I was wondering, is there some symbolism in the words there? You know, we say at various points in our lives or about a situation, you can see through the cracks, you can see what needs to be filled in or changed. And a bar is not only a place where you drink and maybe shift your perspective because you get drunk, but it's also the word bar, a block. So it could be something there about I'm seeing through the cracks of something which is exposing a block, and I'm really ready to let all this crap go now, which is associated with my younger self.
Yes, interesting, because then I think about the fact that the first two loos were blocked.
Yes.
And so then it's like I'm seeing the block, but from a different perspective, where there is no longer an actual block, because I've, I can see there's something there.
Yeah, which is really lovely. Mm. And it's that third one where you could see that was the more makeshift one that you said was like a wild west lean-to. So, I know, what does the Wild West mean to you?
I don't feel like I've got any real association. I mean, other than programs I've watched that are set in that era, I don't feel like I've got any personal... I don't think it really was from the Wild West, but even the fact that it had a bar underneath, like it felt very, you know, sort of archetypal Wild West settings where it has that kind of bar and this sort of very, everything's very wooden. Yeah. So maybe I don't know.
Maybe pioneering. Wild West was pioneering country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
So maybe something to do with that. Yeah. And then... Just reading my notes. I know we're near the end of the dream, but the very graphic, the guy emerges from the loo to try to grab hold of you. So he wasn't in the loo when you first went. So he has something to do with the letting go of the diary. You've let go of all that crap. And part of that was this guy that wants to grab you and hold you back. So he, in a sense, somehow, we probably won't go into it a lot, but he symbolises something that you've let go, an energy that you've let go that's maybe grasping, or more than that, wanting to hold you back, a part of yourself that's wanted to hold you back. And that's when you notice you're wearing the green cardigan. And you said you do have a green cardigan that you wear sometimes?
Yes, in the dream cardigan was an actual cardigan I have.
So what's when do you wear that cardigan? What does it mean to you?
It's a cardigan. I don't tend to wear it out and about much. It is more of a kind of cozy cardigan. It's actually quite a nice cardigan. I just don't tend to wear layers when I'm out of the house. It's like it's actually an aquamarine colour. It's kind of in between blue and green, quite dark, and it's got a, I don't know what this texture is called, sort of like bubbly and soft at the same time. But yeah, I'll tend to wear it if I'm sort of dressed down. If I've got, say, like yoga pants and a cami, I'd put that on over the top to be warm.
Okay. So relaxed, dressed down, not usually seen in public with it. It's comfort at home. And you're wearing it in the dream, and he's trying to grab it because he wants it. So, you know.
Yes, I don't know if he wants the cardigan or wants. I think he perhaps is just trying to get me.
Okay.
Me stroke the Kindle. And it's just he happens to grab the cardigan as like a way of grabbing me, I think.
Yeah.
But I definitely have that sense of, well, actually, I don't feel like he should have me or the cardigan.
Yes,
like,
I love that.
I'm having the cardigan too.
So I love that because there was the acknowledgement that you thought he was after the green cardigan because you go, you're not having that. So he may have been, when you got rid of him and he bounced back a bit, he may have been a part of yourself that was holding you back from going out into the world in a different way. He wanted to hold on to the green cardigan, the comfort at home, or wanted to take that comfort away from you for some reason. And he also wants the Kindle. He's also has wanted something new to, or he's going back to the 2012 when you first got your Kindle or something like that. But the important thing is that you reached a point of deciding exactly what you wanted. You know, earlier in the dream, am I wearing the right thing? Blah, blah, blah. And now it's like, wait, no, you're not having the Kindle. You're not having my green cardigan. And not only that, but oops, we killed you as well.
Oh dear, whoopsie. Yeah, it's interesting actually. This really is standing out to me. So when I'm looking back at how I worded it, I said, we finish and as we leave, a man comes out of the loo and tries to grab us. And then I describe him. We managed to get the Kindle. And so I think he initially, I don't know if he's trying to grab us or the Kindle or both. We managed to get the Kindle. And then I've put in brackets, the Kindle seems like a theme, it morphs. So sometimes we have it and sometimes we're looking for it and sometimes it's not a Kindle. And then I put, but he grabs my green cardigan. I consider leaving it and then decide I shouldn't. And so I pull it hard. And so he lurches forward, but I managed to get it. And so it's kind of like, as because of his grab, like weight has gone this way, because I pull it, he suddenly then rebounds back into the loo. So it's interesting that looking at it from that lens of this being this kind of cozy security, that I'm like, you know what? I'm going to have that too, actually. Good. Thank you very much. Great. I'm going to keep the kettle and I'm going to keep my cardigan. And the fact that I considered it, like perhaps it's worth letting go of my cardigan to escape with the Kindle, but no, I'm going to have that too.
You know what? That's really important. That's so insightful, Leanne, because it kind of then echoes the feeling of the neighbours again too, that they are out there, they're doing their Kindle, they're doing their vibrancy, they're doing their adventure, but they also have that rootedness at home, the balance, and you've and that's the same there, which is really, really lovely. And then, well, you killed him, but you justified that. And of course, the killer in a dream is not the same weighty thing as if you killed someone and waken up. It's merely putting an end to something. you put an end to that.
And he was a baddie.
And he was a baddie. So we all have to let go of our bad influences or parts of our past or whatever. And then you're left at the end trying to demo. I'm looking for the Kindle. What I'm looking for is something like this. Actually, I don't know if it's something like this, but it's something kind of like this office cabinet. And it may be that because you, on closer examination, you thought it might have been something your children brought home earlier in life, or even had, you know, I was picturing when you said that children's toys were often big plastic mobile phones or calculators as well. So it could be introducing some kind of playful element. The Kindle, the changes that I want to make are maybe playful or maybe calculated. Maybe the changes I want to make, I do want to make in a more calculated kind of way. Or I want to be accountable for it, because you said it's a kind of something an accountant would use. But most of all, I think because it was old-fashioned, it harks back to that feeling of doing a renovation like your neighbours were, honouring the historic and not letting go of that while also expanding into the new. So
yes,
how does that reflect and what would you like to say?
Gosh, it's so interesting, the repeating themes all the way through. That's fascinating. So what really has struck me is, as I said, this feels as though it's going to be a year of change. And I don't know what kind of change, but I suddenly realised at the start of this year, what I'm about to say is going to sound really weird as a realisation, because it's kind of obvious, but you know how sometimes you can be so like in life, you sort of look up and go, oh, I'm here. I hadn't realised I was here. I'd always had this sense since my children were small that although I have, you know, created what I've created in terms of the work I do and other things that are for me personally, I'd always had this sense of my number one priority is they, and I had this for whatever reason, this age of 16, it's so important to me that they get to 16 stroke leaving school and have been raised in this really stable, secure family life, which wasn't what I had. I had like an absolutely, you know, great in many ways, but I was raised by a single father. My parents split up when I was five. We travelled. I mean, it was like a very, very different childhood. And again, had some lovely parts, but it really wasn't a stable, secure family upbringing. And so I had this really strong sense of that's my number one priority. Like everything comes below that. And so this was always kind of in the future, which felt like, you know, when my children were tiny, they're very close in age as well. They're only less than 2 years apart. So it was like, you know, just at the coalface of life for so many years, juggling everything around their happiness and well-being. And it suddenly dawned on me at the beginning of this year this is that year. Like, oh my goodness, we're at that year. As in, of course, my children aren't grown up. It's not at all that I was like, okay, my work is over once they turn 16. But I think there's probably reasons that was such a, it felt such an important age to me. I think there was a bit like, if I can get them there and they are happy and healthy at 16, it's like, it's like they're prepared to meet what life brings then.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like they're formed. There's more work to do, you know, for them, for me, but they're formed. Yes. They've kind of got that stuff done. And so, yes, I kind of looked up at the start of this year and was like, oh my goodness, this is that year. How have I suddenly arrived here without realising? Because my daughter's the youngest of the two. My daughter turned 16 in July. She leaves school, as in like her kind of initial schooling. She'll go on to do A-levels, but she finishes kind of secondary school this summer too. And I was like, oh, and now what? What do now?
Wait, I forgot to plan for me. I only saw that far.
It always felt so far off that I was just like, oh, this is, I was talking to Jonathan, my business partner, about it. He said he reminds me of when people kind of scale Everest and they get to the top and they're like, and now what? I hadn't like, I don't know what to do. And it's so like that, where it's like, my goodness, it's a wonderful thing. Like I feel so happy and so celebratory of who they are, everything that we've created for and with them. And I do feel like I've got something opening up. I don't know what that is. I don't know what changes that's going to bring. But I don't feel as though I had that kind of North Star of them turning, both being 16. It doesn't feel like it was made up. It feels like that came from somewhere deep and important. That isn't an arbitrary number. Again, it's not that I'm not going to be a parent, but it still feels that that was an important milestone.
Yeah.
And I can feel there is something shifting because they've reached it, or they will have this year.
What happened to you when you were 16?
I don't recall anything. I think I'd had really, again, all sorts of crazy stuff happening right up all the way through my childhood, really. I had quite a difficult time in many different ways when I was 15, which I think may have informed this idea of like, if I can kind of almost like get them over the hump of, you know, everything going wrong for them at 15. So I think it was the 15 part. It was like, if I can get them past 15 without anything awful happening to them, we're there.
Yeah, you've done it. That's great. And you have. Well, congratulations.
Like, thank you.
Yeah. And your dream's got the celebration and the buttonholes and all of that as well.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's unknown from what you say, but there's a lot of clues in the dream to help you feel comfortable with the position. It's okay to be in threshold for a while. It's okay to realise that there's enormous potential, like the house with all the extra rooms. It's okay to know that you can hold on to and honour the past and the history. And it's okay to have that symbol of the Kindle of, I sometimes got it, I sometimes haven't. So it's kind of a maybe lost aspect of myself or maybe found, but it's all threshold and that's all good. And you have, you know, infinite choices to how you go with that.
Yes, that feels reassuring.
Yeah. So, your work.
Which is funny enough, just to say that, it's interesting, that word reassuring, because you know how sometimes in dreams where you have that kind of, I'm searching, I'm trying to escape, and it has a fear-based tone.
Yes.
The dream didn't either. The dream, no. I felt quite comfortable, like able to meet the challenges. And the bit where the Kindle turned into the calculator was actually, I was kind of confused, but in a kind of amused way, where I was like, huh, what's going on here?
Yeah.
None of it felt, even the bit where the man was grabbing us, that moment felt high stakes, but in general, I felt as though I've got this. It felt reassuring even through the unknown. So that's, I hadn't realised that until you'd reflected kind of the themes. I'm like, yeah, that was actually a really reassuring dream.
It was, and you had it in the, what you were wearing for the wedding, where you said it's appropriate, it's comfortable, and you had it in the green cardigan. I'm holding on to this sense of comfort. You're not having it, man. It's mine. Reassuring. And sometimes we don't know exactly what's going to happen next, but and that's where for a lot of people the fear can come up or the anxiety, but you've got the reassurance.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much.
That's an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, I feel even more excited about what this year might bring now. Again, I have no idea. I just know there's something.
Yeah, that's great. Mm. And in the meantime, while there's change coming and you know there's something, you've got your business, your Wild Sovereign podcast and your work around that. How did all that begin?
Well, it's interesting the way my father has popped up as part of this dream exploration, because my path and my work feel very intrinsically linked with him and his death. And so, as I said earlier, we were very close because we were a single parent family. He was a very, different kind of person. Very, very adventurous, extremely intelligent, very artistic. He was kind of a bit one of those, sort of polymath types. And so my childhood reflected like all of these different interests and passions and wanderlust that he had. And I kind of was along for the ride in some ways. Again, because of that, we were very, very close. And then in 2012, he was killed in a road traffic accident. And the interesting thing was, up until then, if I was talking to someone about, like, say, for example, I was talking to someone who had lost their father, I'd be like, I can't even imagine how I will cope. Like when he goes, which hopefully will be a long time from now, it's like my life will be over. And it's so interesting because it was actually true, but it's just in a completely different way as I imagined. So when he was killed, it was, without going into too many details, it was a very kind of dramatic, complicated death in that a woman had run him over. She refused to give a statement. The ambulance made mistakes. The police made mistakes. He had to have two post-mortems. There was an inquest. I mean, it rumbled on and on and on. And so for a whole year, I think the inquest was a year after he died. So in that whole year was just obliterated by experiencing and journeying through all of what his death brought up. And then there was also, on top of this, big family ruptures as a result of both his death and then money. And so and then I also, my children were tiny then. My children were only 2 and 3. And so I was also, you know, quite a young mother, grieving the death of my father and journeying with all of this. And so it sounds like a year of hell. And yet, whilst, of course, that was really, really difficult, the day that I found out he died, I have this recollection of the day he died, sitting surrounded by my family, and it was September he died. And it was like there was kind of that magic hour light, you know, in that kind of time of day when it's magic hour. It wasn't that time of day, but it had that sort of light where I could sort of see this gold in the air.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's like I'm seeing something that has always been there. And for some reason, I can only just see it. And that sort of sense just kept expanding over that year. So I was simultaneously dealing with the absolute worst things I could have possibly imagined I'd ever have to deal with. And then simultaneously, I was like, but life is so beautiful and so magical. And it's like he's gone, and yet I can feel him. Like I can feel him so tangibly. And if that's true, what else is true? And so By the time that year was over, I was completely different. I was already like in this sense of, I guess, sort of woken up to what we might call like the spiritual truth of life. And I didn't have any framework for it. I didn't have any, you know, ideas of what exactly was going on. I just felt like I've been open to the magic and beauty of life.
Yes, fabulous.
And so I can sort of tell you how it ended up doing the work I do. But if there's anything you want to ask before I go into that, but it was all seeded from that year.
Yeah, no, I love it. It's absolutely extraordinary. You've used beautiful words. It can rest as it is. And there was a sense of that from the dream, but I've just lost it at the moment. So you keep going. Oh, in the dream at one point you were saying with the clothing, it's not about how I look, it's about how I feel. It's that tuning into the feeling again. Mm. I didn't mean to refer back to the dream, but in the dream we're looking for the Kindle again. It's that feeling, you know, and that's essentially within all the magic there, you were tuning into the feelings, things you hadn't felt before. But keep going. It's a beautiful story.
Thank you. And so I began to write. I just began writing on a blog. And I'd always loved, I'd love writing, I'd love words, I'd love reading, and just never had an outlet for it. And so in that year, so at the time I was working, had a very like just so life, like all the things that our culture tells us are important. I was married, had a beautiful house, had my two children, had a career. And so all of it was perfect. And yeah, I was always had this sense of I'm searching for something, but I don't even know what the thing is I'm searching for. Interestingly, going back to the dream, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So I always had this like restlessness of like there is something missing. Even though I'm really happy, and even though I have all the things that I value, love, our culture tells us are the things that are, you know, the important things to get, there's something. What is it? And so over the course of that year, it was like, oh, I'm finally getting a sense of this thing that I was always searching for. And then almost a year to the day after he died, I was at this point thinking, whatever this thing is that I'm feeling, given it's allowed me to journey through seemingly the worst year of my life, and I actually feel better than perhaps I ever have, there's something in this that I can share with other people. I just don't have I don't know how. Like, what is it that if I could just bottle this and give it to people, I would. I just don't know how to. And so I was looking for, like, perhaps there is a modality I could train in or something like that. And I had one of those funny moments, which was like, really spiritual and not at the same time. I was Googling. I was standing in my kitchen. I was probably making dinner and Googling at the same time. And I was looking for like, how can I express this thing? And I read, and the line that I'm about to share with you is so like, been said so many times in all kinds of spiritual traditions, so it clearly wasn't the line itself. It was just the moment I was in. But as I was Googling all these different things, I read this line that said, thoughts create your reality. And it was like someone had just like done some kind of electric shock in my mind.
Yeah.
And I stood in my kitchen, and it was like, it wasn't just words. It was like I suddenly saw, that's true. Oh my goodness, that's true. And I had, it was like a carousel of all my thoughts and all my beliefs going round. And sorry, I just banged the mic as I demonstrate the carousel. And it was like every time one would pass me, I'd go, oh my goodness. Yes, that's just my thought. And that's what's created this. And then another one would go past. And so I was having this mind-blowing experience of just seeing all of these thoughts pass me and seeing, oh my goodness, that created that, that created that. And I'll tell you two other parts that kind of make this story make sense. So back 15 years before that, I'd had a very traumatic event where I'd been attacked. And since then, which is a whole story in itself, but just to abbreviate it, I'd been left with panic attacks and chronic facial pain since that event. And I'd had all kinds of treatment to try and deal with this facial pain, including I'd had a root canal done. I mean, my dentist was pleading of me saying, it's not your teeth, but I was so in so much pain. I was like, I'm at this point, just take the root. I'm willing to try anything. I was prescribed anti-epilepsy drugs, all kinds of things. And I'd got to the point where I was like, okay, clearly nothing's going to work. I just need to learn to live with it. So this was 15 years of this pain. A few days after I had that mind-blowing carousel moment in the kitchen, I was driving my children to nursery and I had that sort of sensation of like, I've lost something. What is it? And I was kind of like almost like batting the chair next to me, like I've got their packed lunchbox, I've got my handbag, and I was like, oh, it's the pain. The pain's gone.
Oh my gosh!
Oh. And it was so strange because it was like I was so used to having it. It was like I'd forgotten something, and as far as I can make out, it was because of what happened. Because, you know, again, after that many years of trying everything and that moment,
yes,
a few days later, the pain had gone. It seems a bit too much coincidence. So that the combination of all those different things had me then train in a particular spiritual tradition. Then I think within months I'd left my job and started to work in that way. And so that would have been 2013. So a year after he died, I began. And then 2014, I left my career and have been doing what I do in various guises and evolutions ever since.
That's an amazing story. It's so magical. And yet, you know, sometimes we use the word magical to imply that something's not real. It was a sense of discovering the magic of life and putting it. And you had, and you got the business going straight. Well, within a year, you were able to leave work and follow it. Yeah, that's absolutely extraordinary. So what, in what way, how is that manifesting at the moment, your work? How do you help people?
Talking of change, as you know, we're going through also a change in our business that we're just mid rebranding as Wild Sovereign Soul. So currently our podcast has been rebranded to Wild Sovereign Soul, but the rest of the business is yet to follow. So we're currently Be Mythical, sort of one part, and Wild Sovereign Soul the other.
On the threshold.
And yes, very much so, like, literally. And the reason for the rebrand, I can, it's a helpful way of explaining what the work is that we do, because it's a very much like what you see on the tin is the work we do. So it has those elements, Wild Sovereign Soul. So we help people to reclaim their wildness. So that's the wildness of their body, their physical body, which when I began doing this work again, I met my now business partner also early 2014, and then we realized that we're doing similar things different separately, why not just do this together? And so we didn't initially have that component to our work. It was a little bit like heady and floating above, and then over time started to realize, like, actually the human animal needs to be noticed, taken care of, honored in this. And so when we're talking about reclaiming our wildness, it's that reclaiming our relationship, that instinctive relationship with our body, but also the land, the cycles of the land, ways of living. It doesn't mean necessarily you need to go and, you know, live in a forest, but some of the ways of living that our human ancestors have lived for most of the time on this planet and have resulted in how we are now.
Yes.
And our bodies are, to a large extent, still like they were hundreds of thousands of years ago and need very similar things. So that's an aspect of our work. The next part is actualizing our sovereignty, which, put simply, is doing that healing work that allows us to, little by little, and I don't mean at all to say like this is like, ta-da, all of a sudden we're always in this place, but to stop reacting to the world from those kind of wounded small parts of ourselves and be able to come into this place of true adulthood where we can be responsible, have agency, respond rather than react. And this is archetypally an aspect of ourselves that we kind of need to grow into. It's not there, like some of the archetypes are there from birth, whereas that sovereign aspect, it is like something we need to mature into, yes, like adulthood. So that's another really important aspect of our work. And then lastly, awakening our soul, which is the part that's kind of always been present in the work that we do, probably as you can hear from my own story. Yes. That was the part that I knew. And the really, that is the whole point of our work, for people to discover who they really are, that soul level, and then live it, to become it, to embody it in all aspects of their yeah. life. So that's the whole point, really, that the only point really of the reclaiming of our wildness and actualizing our sovereignty is so that we can live as soul, from yes. soul. And it's finally I found the one thing that I can be endlessly interested in. I've got one of those minds that's diving here, then here, then here, and then here. And it's that through line. I always see the soul in itself as a North Star, but it's also become the North Star for our work, because it's kind of, it all comes back to that.
Yes.
And through the soul, we also open to that connection to everything, you know, whether we call that spirit, God, source. It's that part of us that is, you know, isn't, even the word connected doesn't really do it, but it allows us to have that awareness. And so that's the work we do. We do it through all kinds of different ways, group work, one-to-one, online, in person. And again, it really, very simply put, is something that I see is so forgotten in this modern world. I remember reading, I love Jung, and I remember reading a letter that he wrote towards the end of his life. And it said something like, I see I failed in my principal task, which is, and this is paraphrasing, I failed in my principal task, which is to awaken people to the fact they have a soul. It's like treasure in the field.
Did and he say that? He thought he failed.
I know. Even now, as I say it now, I can feel tears coming. I was just like, oh my gosh, you didn't fail. You didn't fail. It may have seemed like you did, but like, those of us that are called to this work, we, you know, I'm not saying everyone has to do it through the lens of Jungian yes. work, but I know so many of us have seen what we're doing, what we're here for, through the lenses that he offered us.
Yes, yeah.
And so, yeah, I feel as though if there was one thing, I would feel like, you know, if I were to have achieved my principal task, it is to have awoken people to even the fact they have a soul.
Yes, that's
still let alone one to awaken.
That's absolutely extraordinary. And I love the way you say, I love the way you totally ground it. Say, it is what it says on the tin. Like, it's a three-step process, okay? Yes. Remember your wild self. Engage sovereignty, and guess what? Awaken the soul.
Yeah.
And I love that you do it through
very
so many.
Practical.
I love the way that you do it through so many modalities. I mean, I met you through the podcast because you extended an invitation to me to be on your show. So I, you know, initially knew you as a podcast host, and you've been doing that podcast for a very long time as well.
Yeah, you're one of the few people that's been podcasting longer than I have.
I have. But it's a lovely long and deep show, and you have lots of, so there's that aspect. But of course, I don't really know anything about the, I know the essence of your work, but I didn't know the practicalities of how you go about it. So I love there that you offer it on so many different levels, you know, the community work through social communities, one-on-one mentoring, and what's the other thing? Group work.
Yes. And then we do all sorts of things, again, because we see that those other aspects of wildness and sovereignty are so, so essential. Again, they probably weren't back in the day when we were living in ways that we were naturally already wild. And sovereignty, when you look at many Indigenous cultures, they may not use the word language sovereignty, but there is this kind of ushering in rites of passage that helps people move through those stages into true adulthood, then into eldership, for example. And so it's really only that soul part that perhaps would have been a kind of intentional, you know, thing that would have still been present back, you know, many years ago, that's still present now.
Yes.
But we need to be consciously thinking about how do we reclaim our wildness? How do we actualize our sovereignty in a culture that isn't talking about those things, that isn't encouraging those things?
Yeah.
The reason I've said that is I just want to add this part. So part of our work is doing things like Jonathan lives in Ibiza and he'll guide people through vision quests. And so they'll go and stay on the land there, you know, in a tent, but, you know, living very close to the land for a few days. And that's, you know, very ancient technology.
Yes.
That humans have done, you know, probably in some form across the world throughout human history, that gives people that opportunity to meet themselves in a way that is difficult in this modern world. So we create these soul quests, soul initiations in various ways that give people that taste of something that otherwise they may never have.
And what examples, do you, that's what Jonathan does, how do you help people in the same way? What kind of rituals do you give them?
So an example of some of the things that I would do, I've trained for, I think it's many years now, I can't remember when it began, in various shamanic lineages. And so I may do either shamanic healing, which is, even though it can sound as though it's one person healing another, I see it much more from the lens of is two souls coming together at a point that's, you know, in some ways you could see it's predestined. They've been called to that point together.
Yes.
To do some work. And I find that in itself so magical, the way their soul would have already been speaking to them, telling them what's ready to be reclaimed, telling them what they're ready to let go of, you know, through dreams.
Yes.
Which I'm sure you see this open. Well, you do, don't you?
Yes.
See these things show up. It could be synchronicities. It could be experiences they're having where it's so clear. It's not like I'm like, oh, this needs healing, ta-da. They're so part of that process. And so I see that not just as a healing, but in itself a soul initiation.
Yes.
It could be through a ceremony that will be very creative, bespoke to that person and whatever it is they are journeying with, the themes that are calling them. And it could be that I work, again, I mentioned earlier, the rose has been such a guiding light and a supporter. And I very much see it as a spirit in itself that I work with women in particular, in ceremony, but also in group work, where we're working, I guess you could say, shamanically with the spirit.
Yes.
Of the rose.
Shaman and kind of alchemical as well.
Yes, very much.
Yeah.
So. Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
So they are some of the ways that we will work. And it's like a smorgasbord of exciting ways to work, because each person we may be like, oh, like, for example, someone that we've worked for many, many years. And I think she's probably taken part in almost every type of offering we've done, all kinds of group programs, one-to-one work, and she's just planning to come to me for a healing and then go to Ibiza to do a vision quest with Jonathan. And so it's just lovely that you can, you know, when it's the right time for that particular person.
Yes.
Again, she's probably been working with for maybe 10 years off and on, and now is the time. It wouldn't
Yes.
have been right before. But
yeah.
We have all these different ways of working that will present themselves when the time's right.
I love that it's all customised basically to each person. I mean, you offer the group work where I guess, you know, other things are discovered, but that you can take people one-on-one, as you said, and customise, design everything so that it fits with their timing. You're kind of bringing them along a bit and then they're ready, bringing them along a bit and then they're ready, giving them the experiences.
Well, it's all on soul time, isn't it?
It is.
That's the it's forever humbling that you realize more and more that you think you've got it, you know, like in your human mind, oh, this would be really good for this person, or, you know, I really love this way of working. And it's the soul gets to decide, really.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
we're all servants of the soul.
And then it's wonderful when it suddenly you get the amazing experiences like you had when your dad died with the magical light. And then with the carousel, it's like that. Those were the times when the soul was ready. Like this is this moment, the stepping through that you couldn't have anticipated at all.
Mm.
Obviously, all the ways that people can contact you are going to be in the show notes. Mm-hmm. But if you just give your website address, which I think is going to change. So which one are you going to give?
It is. I'll give both, give both, if that's okay. But it will redirect. So we're currently at bemythical.com. We'll hopefully in the next month be at wildsovereignsoul.com. It feels okay, so good. I've hardly ever said that yet. And every time I say it, I get such a thrill.
It feels so good. Well, we're recording this, I think, 3 weeks out from the show being published.
Oh, so
you may be there by then. But of course, people will be listening to this forever and ever, won't they? They listen to our podcast for many years to come, don't they? Mm. So they'll have that show. We could have talked for ages. Thank you so much for being a lovely guest and for spending such a lovely time exploring your dream and then introducing us to all the magic and yet the very grounded magic, the very necessary path that you're taking people on in their soul awakening journey. So thank you for introducing us to that in such a vibrant and exciting way.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure. It really has. I mean, I love a chance to get to hang out with you anyway, Jane. This has been just like our last two conversations, so rich. And yes, I have absolutely loved this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Have a lovely day.
And you.
Thank you. Oh, I have so much fun with the Dream Show. It's so lovely. It's such a lovely experience for me, meeting all the guests and delving into their dreams. And I hope you're enjoying it too. For those of you that haven't got to the YouTube version yet, just in case you've missed, you may have been listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify for all these 16 years, nearly 17. And since the beginning of this year, we've now also added the version on YouTube, so the full visual version, the last two episodes, episode 300 and 301, you can go to my YouTube channel and watch. And of course, this one you can see there too. It's been really interesting for me also getting to know Leanne, because as I mentioned during the podcast, during the last few months, I've been a guest on her show twice. And on each occasion, a dream has come up and we've explored her dreams quite deeply. And each of the three dreams I've done with Leanne have been completely different and been about completely different areas of her life. So if you've enjoyed listening to today, you'd probably like to pop over to her podcast, which is called Wild Sovereign Soul, and listen to the couple of episodes that I've done with her, where we're not only exploring her other two dreams, but she's also talking with me about, you know, dreams in general and the what I do and how I do it, and lots of tips and great deep discussions. So you might like that too. Leanne's website is bemythical.com. That's all one word. And as you also heard her say, they're rebranding and changing that to wildsovereignsoul.com. One way or the other, you'll get there. And all the other contacts for social media and also details of how you can work with Leanne are in the show notes. And of course, I will ask you the question, because I like to ask this question and put you on the spot. Have you done any of my courses yet? Because you can start today, right now, with my first course, which is called How to Interpret Your Dreams Step by Step. Sign up at my website at janeteresa.com. That's Teresa without an H. And look, the link is in the show notes. And that's also where you can find out about how to consult me about your dreams, or buy my books, or do my other courses. So that's janeteresa.com. Thank you, as always, to Ewan Gray for sound editing, video editing, and composing our lovely theme music. And thank you for listening to yet another episode of The Dream Show. And I hope that you're sharing these episodes with people that you know will probably enjoy this. Everyone dreams. Everyone's interested in dreams. Do share. Until next time, have a beautiful day. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson.